This week, we honor the memory of Marcia Norris and her 17-year-long battle against cancer. The following show is taped prior to the Norris Group's fundraising event, I Survived Real Estate, which benefited breast cancer research. Thank you for your support and prayers. Marcia will be greatly missed and forever loved. We were so privileged to have her in our lives. September 17th, 2010, the Norris Group returns with its award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate 2010. The Norris Group has assembled an incredible lineup of industry experts to discuss the state of REO from the inside, including regulatory intervention and aftermath, bulk buying, myths and facts, and the opportunities emerging for eager real estate professionals. 100% of the proceeds support the Orange County affiliate of Susan G. Komen for the Cure. This event would not be possible without generous help from the following platinum partners: Foreclosure Radar and Sean O'Toole, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops and President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronskis, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Berry, Claudia Buys Houses, Fry Wiles, the creative agency responsible for the iSurvive2010.com, MVT Productions, who always provide our audiovisual needs, and White House Catering, who will provide the three-course meal for this black tie event. Visit iSurvive2010.com for details.
Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our special guest is Marcia Norris, my wife. And she is the reason that we have the I Survive Real Estate events. And September 17th, we'll be hosting our third one. And that'll be held at the Nixon Library in Orange County, for the dual purpose of discussing what the future holds for real estate and raising a lot of money for finding a cure for breast cancer. Marcia, welcome to our show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And how are you feeling today?
I feel terrific.
That's an interesting answer for somebody that has what you have, and your attitude has always been that way. So where does that come from?
I don't know. I guess just from my great faith that God isn't finished with me yet.
You've got something else that's going to be going on. But that's, how important has that attitude been in dealing with all the things that that you've had to deal with?
I think it's critical. I really do. Because our attitude really sets the tone of how we live our life. And if we live it in a very positive manner, then all of life seems better for us.
Is it most of the time when people haven't seen you, but they know that you've got cancer, that they expect to see somebody different than they see when they meet you?
Right, especially since I've been dealing with this now for going on 15 years. I guess they expect to see somebody that's pretty downtrodden and emaciated and just sickly looking, and I'm not.
Not only don't you look like that, but your attitude has never been one of... I'm sick and I want sympathy or something. It's never been anything like that.
Right. People, a lot of times when they're around me, they forget that I even have it, which is wonderful. That's great for me.
Well, yeah, their original approach is usually very cautious and contained. You know, how are you today?
Right. And I had a good friend of mine recently that lives in Colorado that I just got back from seeing. And she said, you know, what we refer to you around here as is the ever-ready bunny.
The ever-ready bunny.
She said, you just keep on going no matter what. And I said, yeah, I do.
That's been quite an amazing thing to observe for your family, too. Let's go back to... the day that this word cancer entered our lives. Before, you know, 15 years ago or so, it was just a word, and then we had a doctor's appointment where it became other than that. How long ago was that? What year was that?
That was 1995.
Mm-hmm. We had a breast exam that needed a second opinion, and we've had that before at the time. I remember mm-hmm. we didn't feel it was very significant, but then when we were in the waiting room, there was a little bit of an ominous feel as we were sitting around people that were missing pieces.
Right. Right.
And it was just that day it kind of dawned on us that this was a different type of meeting that we were about to have. But I don't think anything could prepare us for the abruptness of the information as it was passed on to you.
Right. You hear that kind of news and you just automatically almost go into shock and sadness and grief and then anger. You move into anger because you're like, why me? You know?
Well, the doctor handling it at the time, we won't use his name, but it was the worst bedside manner you could possibly have.
Oh, absolutely. Just so unsympathetic, unfeeling, is the worst experience I'd had at that point.
And within, he introduced us to the idea that we, in fact, were going to deal with stage 2 breast cancer, and within a minute had grabbed his day timer and told us he had an appointment open for a surgery Tuesday or Thursday, and he'd leave us alone for a couple minutes to make a decision.
Right.
That was quite, well, that facilitated our quick exit from that place.
Absolutely. Especially when you saw everybody coming out of his office missing limbs. I'm like, ooh, I don't know that I trust this doctor.
Yeah, that was a very uncomfortable feeling. Now, as you usually do, and that's the one thing about breast cancer, is that it constantly has ups and downs.
Yes.
There's moments where you feel, okay, we've got it under control or even whipped, and then you're constantly reminded that it can show up again. But that first day is really a tough day.
Yes.
And
you know, I remember actually leaving you at that office, and I said, I just have to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to my best friend and broke down and cried.
Yeah.
I needed that. I needed another woman to be with me at that time.
Yes. You don't stay in that mood long, though.
No. I'm a survivor. I'm a fighter. I'm like, okay, what can I do? And I think that's the attitude you have to take. You cannot leave your health in the hands of just the doctors because they have protocols and they treat everybody the same. And we're not all the same. We're all individual. And we all have different needs. Even our bodies, you know, will let us know that we need different things if we are tuned into it and listen. And you need to listen to your inner guidance and make sure that you're choosing doctors and a team that you trust and you can rely on and you feel good about working with. That's real important.
When that initial time that we dealt with cancer, we went, first of all, we didn't have the correct insurance. We had an HMO, which limited our
right.
scope. And we found that within that scope, there was nothing acceptable.
Right.
We probably went to at least two or three other doctors that we left and went, no, that isn't going to work. And we finally ended up at a UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
So the UCLA experience, how did that feel differently?
It was great because they treated you as a whole person, not a number, not, you know, a nobody. They treated you and saw you as a complete team, everything from the surgeon to the anesthesiologist to the psychologist to the cosmetic surgeon in case you needed reconstructive surgery. And it was very refreshing to go to somebody like that. You're like, finally, we've reached someone. They work as a team and they understand what you're going through and they specialize in that. And they give you a lot of hope.
Yeah, when we left there that day, that was one of those up moments where you felt, okay, we finally have hit the
right.
place where if in fact we have to get this done, we feel comfortable with the team. You know, it's interesting, too, that we've experienced is that sometimes what people have said has been necessary hasn't been necessary.
Right.
So the expertise of these teams vary a great deal. And that's kind of uncomfortable when you realize that you could be being told something that's absolutely not true.
Right. Well, again, like I said, a lot of times they have a protocol that they have to follow and they treat everybody the same. And a lot of times they're not open to alternative therapies. They're just into just traditional therapies. That's what they know. So everybody gets the same cookbook treatment.
What was special about UCLA was that I felt that they had cared. They really cared about you. And they even had, I remember we were there for a long time, but mm-hmm. because you had to meet with each of these individuals and then they met together as a team and
right.
came up with a game plan that was pretty specific for you.
Right.
And that sure felt different than anything we'd experienced.
Right. Up until that point, all the doctors had been saying, well, you need a radical mastectomy. And I never felt like that was the case. And when we got to UCLA, they said, you don't need a radical. You just need a lumpectomy
mm-hmm.
and possibly radiation. And so that's what they did.
Now, it's interesting. Even at UCLA, they had protocol that you decided not to follow. And they were quite surprised at your independence on that one. because they had a protocol of you were going to get lymph nodes taken and you were going to take tamoxifen, right. And you told them no.
That's right. I feel like it's my body and I'm going to do what I feel like is right for me. And I don't know if you remember, but several years later when I went to another doctor for a checkup, an oncologist, he was a younger doctor. And one of the first things he asked me was, well, what did your lymph nodes say? And I said, they didn't say anything because they didn't take them. I didn't let them. And he said, well, good for you, because in another few years, we won't even do that.
Yes.
That's, and I'm like, yes, I made the right decision.
But that's amazing that those old protocols. I remember if there could have been a worse experience with a doctor, it was the one that we tried one more time before we went to UCLA, because we didn't have insurance that covered at UCLA.
Right.
We went to one more Riverside doctor who, after you, and by this time you were pretty knowledgeable and challenging what he said was necessary, he finally, just out of frustration, blurted out that some famous person had a mastectomy. If it's good enough for her, it should be good enough for you. And that was an astonishing sentence.
Yeah. And well, he was old school again, you know, and he even brought up to me that he had done the same surgery for his sister. Like that was going to carry any weight with me, which it didn't. And he was very belligerent. And I remember before he left the room and you were in the room with me, he says, well, I will be sending you a letter. You will sign it, absolving me from any further commitment or liability. And I'm like, gladly. But if you remember, too, in his office when we walked in, all the equipment was very antiquated. And I'm like, this is a little scary. This guy's not on the cutting edge.
No. When I wrote the check, I remember the lady was excited that she actually had a stamp for the name. And it was an event. That was an innovation for that office.
Yeah, I remember
that.
So
that was, I remember even making a comment, innovation a little hard to come by around here. She is definitely. After we had the surgery, do you remember what you wanted to do before we even got home?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to go to eat.
Wanted to go eat. So we're sort of wrapped up in this bandage, and we go to Claim Jumper and eat a gigantic meal thinking, okay, we're past this. And then we get that stinking phone call where...
Yeah, they didn't get a clear margin.
They didn't get a clear margin.
So I had to go back in again.
To me, that was the worst day, because I had been, it's like a head fake where you think, okay, we solved this, and then you realize, wow. And then you start thinking, okay, maybe this doesn't get solved. It just gets like pushed forward. And that's, mm-hmm. ever since that day, that's almost how it's felt, is that we're always pushing it forward, and thank God it's been able to be done. But, you know, after the second surgery, we had some time where it didn't emerge for quite a while. It was about 5 or 6 years.
Right, right.
I mean, didn't we have a 5-year anniversary where that was supposed to be significant?
Right. They usually tell you if you're symptom-free for 5 years, you're pretty much in remission.
And then the next year we found out we weren't.
Right.
And
right.
That had to be, to me, that was even a worse day, because I remember when they talked about it had metastasized, and we're kind of new to that word, we go online and read what that is, and mm-hmm. that's stage 4 breast cancer, and then you start going, oh, this is seriously significant. And I remember we cried and we held each other, because we really didn't think there was an enormous amount of healthy time left.
Right.
And
yeah, when you hear stage 4, you're like, well, I'm not long for this world. That's your first thought.
Yeah, and that's sometimes I remember another very rude physician, as you were, being a little independent, saying you weren't going to be taken, what he said, and he very plainly told you, lady, you have stage 4 breast cancer, terminal stage 4 breast cancer. And I remember getting into the elevator with you at UCLA, and you looked at me and said, I just want you to remind you that we've heard this before. And I'm not buying it.
Right.
And that was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was. So, I think a lot of my doctors now are surprised how well I've done for the 15 years.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, whenever you go for some of the alternative treatments, it's always turns into an education fest if people end up asking questions, because you are one prepared person. As far as what you continue to do, you read constantly on
right.
the subject
yeah,
of this.
Yeah, I still do, because there's always, you know, you try something, it doesn't work for you that might have worked for someone else, and you're okay, like, what's next? And there always seems to be, you know, someone that brings something else to the table for me to look at and go, have you tried this? And, you know, I am very appreciative of that. I mean, it's great to have a support group around you and people that are sympathetic to what you're going through. But, you know, you're always able to learn from others. And I'm very fortunate right now. We have a good doctor, and she is a UCLA doctor in Rancho Cucamonga. And she's very open to letting me try what I feel like I need to try in the alternative field, but being there as backup for me and keeping testing me and keeping on top of it.
And sometimes even suggesting a doctor that we currently see out in the desert.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, and he has helped a great deal.
Yes.
A great deal.
Especially, you know, it seems like it, once a year we have, I guess the best term is a crisis.
Right.
And it always seems like we figure a way out, and it's always something different, isn't it?
It is. And it makes you have to research more and grow more in your knowledge of what you're going through. But it makes you realize how resilient the body can be and can help you in healing if you will, you know, help it along with the different tools. And like I had never taken full-blown chemotherapy, traditional chemotherapy. We tried the IPT that we talked about last year, and for a lot of people it worked. A lot of people went into remission. It didn't work for me.
Yeah, it didn't, but it did get you out of pain at the
time.
It
did. I mean, it helped to a point.
Right.
But it didn't put me in remission.
Right.
So we're like, all right. Then our oncologist, and she said, well, you've had this for so long, I think you just have a resistance. Because it was very low-dose chemotherapy. It didn't
right.
make me sick, didn't make me lose my hair. It was great. So she put me on something called Zoloda, which is a pill, a chemo pill. And from doing that and the nutritional IVs, like the high-dose vitamin C IVs with alpha-lipoic acid, and doing the hormone therapy, the bioidentical. Markers are coming down drastically, and I'm feeling great, and there's no bad side effects, and it's great. So it's working.
What's kind of neat about that is a lot of the stuff 15 years ago didn't exist, so
right.
there is progress being made. And they look at this much more like almost like having diabetes, where it's a managed issue rather than something that what we read, you know, years ago, you weren't really supposed to be here for a long time.
Right. And, you know, with having that kind of time and using these different therapies and doing the research and work, you realize it's not just a physical issue. There's emotional issues attached to it. There's spiritual issues attached to it. And it makes you take a hard look at that and start working on those things to, you know, correct them or eliminate them from your life.
And that what you said is very important, is that most of the medical is set up to deal with the symptoms, not necessarily get at the core and see if it's solvable.
Right.
I think that's one of the things we've learned is that, again, most of the medical insurance is really geared toward paying the symptom stage, not necessarily anything that goes after a cure.
Right. They're not into preventive medicine at all.
Yeah. And hopefully that'll change as that has more success. Because it, right. when a doctor from UCLA starts suggesting, you know, hormone treatment from a doctor that's really an alternative and on the outskirts of a mainstream, that's an impressive leap to me.
Right.
You know, what's been special to me, too, is our industry's response to you having cancer, because we have always been well-received. If we go to one of the clubs and you're there, it's you're always surrounded by people that care about you, and you are the recipient of whatever happens to be the new treatment, the noji juice or the dark chocolates.
The Monavi. And, you know, I think that's great because those things do help you on the physical level. But having the emotional support of people is what's really special. And that really keeps me going. I mean, just before we came, we picked up our mail, and I got a encouragement card from our church group, which was very special. And I get something like that almost every week, and it's so appreciated. And, you know, like the San Diego Club, Bill Tan's Club.
The flowers.
They send me flowers and really encourage me, and it's so appreciated. They're very special to me. I'm very blessed.
It is a very special group of people. One of my favorite moments is when someone comes up to me and they're kind of hesitant because they think they're going to suggest something that may come across as weird, and I have to go, oh, trust me, we probably already own the machine you're about to say, but we've looked at a lot of alternative things, and I think that comes down to you have to sort of take personal responsibility of this and figure out your own path.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like I said, because we're all individual, and we all have different needs, whether it's nutritional or emotional or spiritual. You just really have to find what it is that you need.
And you found during this journey that there's a lot of people that are affected by cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like when you buy a new car and all of a sudden everybody's driving it. This is happens in cancer where, you know, you have it and all of a sudden you realize, wow, almost every family is touched in some way by this.
Yes, that's true.
What would you suggest to somebody that's gotten their first news? It's their turn to deal with this.
The first thing, a very good cry.
A very good cry, okay.
And that's very cleansing. And then to recenter yourself and go, okay, now what can I do? And you start your reading and your research. I mean, there's great books out there. There's one written by an author named Bill Henderson, Fighting Cancer Naturally. The Bioidentical Hormone Therapy. Because when we went to this doctor for the hormones, he looked at my test results and he said, you've been on an estrogen blocker and your estrogen is still this high. Something is terribly wrong. So he put me on progesterone cream, a natural progesterone cream, which helps balance that out. And after reading his book, which he has a very good book as well, his name is Dr. Platt, I realized I had been estrogen dominant most of my life. And so I was a time bomb, really, and didn't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
And had I ever been on birth control pills, it would have progressed even further, quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of scary because doctors will give people hormones without even testing them.
And I don't recall even hearing the word.
No.
For 15 years.
No.
So it's a specialty. And I guess that's one of the things that you have to realize is this will be a team of people that you need to assemble, not just one. Don't take somebody's word for it. This is the protocol, and you have to go do this.
And this Dr. Platt also, what really impressed me is what got him into the field of bioidentical hormone therapies is the fact that he lost his own mother when she was 55 to breast cancer.
Mm.
And he wasn't able to help her because he didn't have the knowledge in the field at the time.
That seems to be a common theme with the people that end up with alternative solutions is that they've dealt with either personally or they've had that event in their life with someone they loved and it wasn't solved. And actually, Susan G. Komen is the same type of thing.
Right.
We're almost down to the last minute. What do you think your family's learned by watching you handle this?
Well, to have great faith, for one, because I'm not afraid of death, because I know where my heart and faith lies in God, and to know that there is support, you know, and love, and as long as you have that, you can get through anything.
I think when they look at you, they're absolutely amazed. And there's been plenty of times where the kids have come up to me and go, does Mom still have cancer?
I know, because I'm never home, right?
Well, if you get a chance to go, you're going. And you just got back from a trip, and we just got back from two vacations, and we're headed to two more. So I guess you're looking forward to the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a new house.
And now a new house to decorate. So
yeah.
Things are looking good. Well, honey, thanks for joining us today and kicking off of our I Survived Real Estate event 2010. And I know you'll be there dressed beautifully.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me on here. And if at any time anyone has any questions that they'd like to talk to me, I'm more than willing to answer any questions.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate 2010. Del May Properties, Elite Auctions, Entrust California, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, Levis Financial Services, Mike Cantu, North San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Personal Real Estate Investor Magazine, Realty 411 Magazine, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, Stars Photography, Tony Alvarez, TheREOMentor.com, Westin South Coast Plaza. To find out more about I Survived Real Estate 2010, visit iSurvived2010.com.